The Guardian.
I'm Rebecca Lloyd-Evans, the host of the new podcast series Camera Off, which features surprising true stories. I'm here to remind you that Close Encounters features open and honest conversations about sex and relationships. So if you've got kids around, or your parents for that matter, then probably better to put your headphones on and enjoy this episode of the podcast.
When it comes to masturbation, people can be very inventive. But the weirdest apparatus I've ever heard of somebody using to wank with is a fridge door. The guy in question was a teenager at the time. A very, very horny teenager. Who'd sort of made it his quest to stick his dick in some new inanimate object around the house every time his parents went out and he'd been left home alone. Before this point, he'd masturbated into items inside the fridge, including a chocolate mousse. In a way, I can understand a chocolate mousse. I mean, it's silky, it's indulgent. But he also tried a beef tomato, which is rather harder to imagine. Wouldn't it be quite acidic and stingy? After working his way through various items in the salad drawer, like some kind of masturbatory MacGyver, one day he was struck by the idea that the rubber seal running around the door of the fridge itself might feel good. And thus, he found himself humping a kitchen appliance, with some enthusiasm and success, apparently. He's far from the only person to have told me that he's managed to pleasure himself with an everyday household item, though. Other things people have inserted their penis into to get themselves off include a jar of Nutella, which belonged to their flatmate, an empty glass jam jar lined with raw liver, the slot of a VCR, a child's inflatable swimming armband covered in Vaseline. And it's not just penises being stuck into things either. From potato mashers being poked up bottoms, to the dorsal fins of plush dolphin soft toys being rubbed in private places, I've heard countless stories, especially from a time in people's youth where they didn't have access to sex shops or online stores. When the power and potency of sexual imagination is so great that people can look at practically anything and see its potential as a wanking device, it does make me wonder how anyone manages to get up in the morning, have a shower, eat their breakfast and head to work without assaulting a shampoo bottle or a slice of Ovis. When your sex drive is high enough and your ingenuity is great enough, almost anything on earth, everything that surrounds you, can become a sex object. Although, I don't necessarily encourage you to try them all.
I think about sex a lot, practically all the time, and not entirely for professional reasons, if I'm honest. And I've often thought, if I didn't think about sex quite so much, if I wasn't quite so preoccupied by my sex drive, would I get a lot more done in life? I'd definitely do more with my days. The guy we're going to meet today defines as asexual. He says he has no sexual attraction to anyone at all and no compulsion to have sex, full stop. I'm intrigued to know if he is going to be the most productive man on earth.
Hello!
Hello.
Hi.
Nice to see you.
Hello, gorgeous.
I like your hair.
Compared to most asexuals, I was really lucky. I discovered the term when I was pretty young. I was 14. And at that age, I was pretty confident that I didn't have a sexuality. I didn't know the word for it, but I knew what the implications of my sexuality were, that I had a lack of interest in it. And my mom happened to offhandedly use the term to describe one of her friends. And I latched onto it then because I realized, oh, that's interesting. I'll go off and wiki that. And when I read the article, I was like, yeah, that sums me up pretty well. I mean, pretty much the entirety of my adolescence, I was completely removed from sex of any kind. And yeah, it never occurred to me when two people left a party holding hands to go to the room upstairs that they were actually going to have sex. I thought they were just going to leave or have a chat or share some donuts.
George is 24 and lives in Manchester. And whilst he concluded quite early on in life that sex really didn't interest him, that doesn't mean he never tried it at all.
I first had sex when I was 17 with a girl. Well, I say I had sex. I've never really known if I lost my virginity at that time or not, because I was very, very bad at it. So she offered to give me a blowy and started. I didn't like it. So then I said, why don't we, you know, go for it? And we did, and I didn't enjoy it, and I kind of wilted. That, mid-coitus.
That naturally happens.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of got bored and left, and didn't really. And that was the one time I thought I'd ever try sex.
By the time George went to university, he was fairly certain that he was asexual, and his first experiment with intercourse had simply confirmed that he really wasn't into it. However, for pretty much all his fellow student friends, the story was quite the opposite, and he found himself surrounded by sex.
When you're thrown into close proximity with people and, you know, your bed is actually just separated by a paper-thin wall from the next bed, and you realise people are having sex a lot. I mean, I had no idea at that age, you know, what was the average amount of time people spent having sex, how many times they liked to have sex. It surprised me how frequent it was, to be honest. But then also surprised me at how short each, you know, kind of, what's the word, pump was.
I think girls are frequently surprised and disappointed by how short each pump is. Yeah, yeah, you are exposed to other people's sex lives in graphic detail in student houses, I find. I once was going at it so hard that I accidentally knocked the clock off my neighbouring student's wall onto his head, and he could tell exactly what time of the night I'd been going at it because I broke his clock. So, sorry about that, Chris. So, you realised that other people were having all this sex, but it wasn't occurring to you. How did you feel about that?
To be fair, it wasn't something I ever wanted, so I didn't mind. It's kind of how, you know, if people like ballet and they go off and watch it and you've got no interest in it whatsoever, you're not envious of them. You're happy for them that they can go off and do something, and you can do something that you enjoy at the same time, like read a comic or watch a film or go out and get drunk.
How did other people react to that? Did they notice?
I think the problem most people have with me is they don't know how to pin me down when they first meet me. I think most people's first intuition is that I must be gay. Then they think that doesn't quite cover it, so they settle on bi. And then after they've known me for about 2 months, people normally pluck up the courage to ask. Because, of course, if I'm not going out with anyone or having sex with anyone, they've got absolutely nothing to go on. So eventually it just seems to drive people mad, like trying to guess what my sexuality is. And I just tell them I'm asexual. And they nod, you know, like one of those nodding dogs. But they don't ask anything more. They don't follow it up with any questions. So I think either people are confused by that and at the same time are afraid of knowing more about it, or they simply don't believe me.
Or do you ever get people saying, oh, you don't want to have sex? Does that mean something really traumatic happened to you as a kid?
Yeah, actually, I went to see a doctor about my asexuality once, and his first question, well, he didn't believe that asexuality was a thing either. But when he realised I was quite adamant about it, his first question was, did you have any sexual trauma in your childhood? And the answer is no. Like, I've had a pretty idyllic childhood, all in all. Like, my parents are still married, I got a sister, we grew up very happy, had lots of holidays.
So, a happy enough history. There was nothing in George's past that would help explain his disinterest in private parts. Some of his friends found it a little baffling, trying to work out quite how he was wired and what was going on, especially given that in certain situations he could get quite touchy-feely.
You know, 3 nights out of 4, you're out. You're getting absolutely hammered on, at that point my tolerance was abysmal, and I'd get hammered on 4 cans of Carling. And you'd meet up with a girl in a club and you just start necking. And I really enjoyed it in the same way that I really enjoyed dancing and really enjoyed having a stupid time when you're drunk.
Did it ever lead to any confusion? Because if you don't mind me saying, yeah, you're a good-looking guy. I can imagine, you know, these girls who are having a drunken snog with you are probably getting quite excited about what might happen next.
Yeah, they might have. Lots of them in my first year of university were complete strangers. Yeah, so I don't know if I led anyone on then, but as I progressed through university, I made a lot of very close friendships, and those started to get confusing for people. Because I was very amorous without being very sexual, which I think sexual people have a hard time comprehending. I only had a few people who explicitly asked me if we could be in a relationship, but there was an awful lot more implicit desires going on, I think. And I am terrible, absolutely terrible at recognizing this sort of behavior. I don't know when someone's flirting with me. People have accused me of flirting with them when I'm not. And the strangest thing is that people seem to think that my comments are disingenuous sometimes. I'm kind of very honest with people. And when I like people very much, I tend to over-evaluate them in a lot of ways. So I do kind of think that the sun shines out of their ass when they're my best friend. And I'll tell them that. And they can just doubt that I'm being sincere.
Are you not swayed by people's looks at all?
No.
Do you even notice what they look like?
Yeah, I notice people's looks. Sometimes, I suppose I did an art degree, and there are certain people, I can describe my attraction to their looks being as, I would really like to draw that person. They would look great in charcoal. So yeah, there are certain faces that I like. I have a penchant for elfish-looking people. I quite like that. I quite like ethereal, alien kind of looks. But if you show me a picture of someone and ask me to tell you how attractive they are, I will have no idea. Unless they've got like tremendously bad acne or an awful mustache, I just will not be able to tell the difference between, say, two brunette men. If you tell me one of them was a 3 out of 10 and one of them was a 9 out of 10, I could not tell you which one probably.
That's so fascinating.
But then in some ways I've also been brainwashed by culture to kind of identify what society views as attractive. So sometimes I can identify it, but it's not an attraction that comes from me personally.
No, it's just an assessment where you can look at someone and go, oh, they tick those boxes that people have told me mean that they're hot.
Yeah, yeah.
Towards the end of his degree, some people still had a skewed perception of what Jord's asexuality meant. And that led to some problematic scenarios. A word of warning here, this next section gets dark.
Yeah, the end of uni pretty much was a free-for-all for making out with me. And other people, we were all getting off. But yeah, I made out with quite a lot of people and quite a lot of straight male friends kind of like threw caution to the wind and we got off. And then I suppose there were a couple of instances where, you know, I was going back with friends who I trusted to share a bed with. So I did have a female friend who I suspect, although we'd had a chat about, you know, not limiting ourselves to each other. We made out a lot, and then I did end up in bed with her a couple of times, and I think she was trying to turn me on desperately, and I wasn't going for it, and that was uncomfortable, but at the same time, because I was kind of in the driving seat, or it was up to me to escalate things, I still had a measure of control, and that was all right. It got worse when one of my male friends kind of came back drunk out of his mind and kind of scooped me up in the bed and kind of like held me really, really close, and we weren't really wearing clothes. And kind of whispered things in my ear and then started kissing me all over, and then that developed into biting me, and it was just kind of there's a painting Francis Bacon did, if anyone's actually bothered to look it up. It's called Two Figures, 1953, And that, I can't look at that painting anymore because it really reminds me of this night. It was just kind of the fact that because I wasn't in control of it and it was someone I cared so much for and they were telling me that they were that I was making them happy by doing this, I was kind of paralyzed for it. And I could kind of like feel when they were stroking me down there, like I could feel my stomach muscles really clenching and tightening. And bile kind of rising up in the back of my neck. And I had to, when they passed out in the end, I had to kind of like push them off, get out, and be sick in the toilet. But yeah, that's putting a downer on the whole asexual thing, but it was just because I was unprepared for it from someone that I cared about so much.
I've got a very vivid image of a Francis Bacon picture in my head now, and Francis Bacon's work is visceral and frightening. I think the kind of highly regrettable scenario you've just described, and I'm so sorry you went through that.
That's all right.
I think many, many people have found themselves in situations where because they care for someone or because perhaps they've been in a relationship with them and they feel that they need to go along with something or because they don't want to upset the apple cart.
Yeah.
They found themselves in that kind of squirmy situation where someone is pushing them too far and pushing their boundaries and maybe even violating their consent.
Yeah.
But they find it very difficult to know how to get out of that and how to say no. And it's a horrible situation.
Yeah, I imagine other people can really empathise with it. In situations where you don't actively want to have sex with someone who is kind of pushing for it. I suppose in some ways people then do feel a little asexual in a way.
Did you ever speak to that friend about the fact that what happened that night upset you so much?
Yeah, it took a while to break through because I didn't want them to feel bad about what was essentially a drunken mistake and they didn't really have any memory of it afterwards. Plus, I didn't know at the time how deeply that would have affected me. It took a while for my anxieties about it to surface later on. So by that time, we'd already discussed it, and I said I was fine with it, and we'd moved on. But then it was more difficult to bring up the later symptoms after we'd said it was all fine. But there were kind of ongoing issues between how we felt about each other romantically after that.
Did this guy openly identify as straight?
Yep. In some ways, I was an easier male to be with than, you know, if you had an openly gay friend, I think they'd be on edge with that. But
it's a bit more nailing your colours to the mast then, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. But because I did identify as asexual, and to be honest, these people knew that I wasn't having sex, I think it somehow legitimised romantic feelings that we might have had for each other, no matter how subtle. I decided that, you know, I had to regain some control over my life and get over this. So I went to a doctor to talk about anxiety, told him I was asexual. And that didn't work out well because he didn't believe me. He sent me on a hormone course treatment. But he seemed to think that my hormones must be out of whack. And then he did several tests and they all came back saying I'm completely normal. Sent me to a rape helpline, which was really embarrassing because nothing that happened to me was in any way comparable to what happens to the people who sadly have to phone up. But to me, it was traumatic. So it was difficult to find the appropriate help. So in the end, I decided to take it upon myself. I said, right, if sex is going to trigger this anxiety when I don't expect it, then maybe I need to be in control of when I'm going to have sex. What I've come to realize now is that I find the idea of having sex with a woman terrifying, just because the onus is largely on me to perform, which you can't really expect of an asexual person, unless you've got a very intimate relationship, maybe. But when I graduated, moved to Manchester, I decided to make a few lifetime resolutions and decided to start dating, and I've slept with 7 men since then, so about 1 man every month. I thought that I'd date men because I can take a passive sexual role. I feel like men are harder to break their hearts. I don't like to generalize, but I thought I'd be pretty safe trying to have a relationship with a man rather than leading on a girl. Also, I have more things in common with men generally in terms of interests, and I know what a male body behaves like.
This plan to date men, he tells me, is an attempt to overcome some of his issues surrounding sex. So, to try and meet potential partners, he puts himself on OkCupid and heads out to Manchester's famous gay bars.
I got off with a lesbian couple first and then got off with this guy. And he said, would you like to grab lunch tomorrow? And I said, yeah, sure. The next day, we grabbed a Nando's, discovered that we both had an intense love for James Bond movies. So I thought, oh, maybe this could go somewhere. You know, we got something in common. And then after the meal, he pretty much was eager to get back to his apartment, which was very nice, to watch Skyfall. So we started watching Skyfall, and then he started taking off his clothes. And I was just sitting there on his leather sofa. And then he asked if I wanted to make out. I was like, yeah, go on then. And this was the first time I'd made out with someone sober, or at least made out with them for a long time. So we started making out. Progressively, his clothes came off. So I kept my pants on. We made out and he got off. And then he pretty much said, I've got some friends coming over later. Can we turn the film off? And would you mind going? So I left and then tried to message him afterwards. And he just didn't reply to my calls. So, and then that pretty much repeated itself with every gay guy I met up with on a date in Manchester for a long time.
It sounds like you don't think that you will find someone to date who won't expect you to have sex. I mean, are you experimenting to see whether you could have some sex as a compromise in order to have a relationship, or are you hoping to find someone else asexual who is very happy not to have that physical side?
I've gone about both ways. I've started integrating with the asexual community, trying to see if there's anyone out there that I could click with. Haven't found anyone yet that slots into my personality as well as my sexual friends, if that makes sense. But yeah, on the other side of it, I am fully willing to compromise in a relationship. It's not that I'm utterly opposed to sex. It's just that it doesn't occur naturally to me. And even though I've had bad experiences, I feel that since I've been reclaiming my sexuality almost, I've become much more adept at it. But in my experience, the people I've dated have expected sex almost immediately. Most of my dates seem to have about a half-hour lunch aspect to them and then a two-hour sex aspect to them. So it wasn't ideal for me. And I don't think the people I was dating really believed in asexuality either, or they wouldn't have tried it on that way.
So I'm presuming that you said on your OkCupid profile, I'm asexual.
Yep.
And yet people still went on dates with you and expected sex quite quickly.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, they kind of misled me back to their apartment and then used tricks I assume work on sexual people, but I was just kind of like going along with it. And they seemed pretty disappointed with the outcome and sent me packing after that.
I can't help but really think, well, what did they expect?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You'd very openly said, I'm a guy who's interested in dating, but I'm not interested in sex.
Yeah. I mean, like, I thought it was pretty obvious that the caveat of dating me was that we could do sexual things, but there'd have to be a slow progression up to it. And they seemed to really want to just kick it into sixth gear from the off.
How do you feel about the sex that you've had?
I suppose it was all right at first because it had some sort of novelty value in my life. I'd say my whole life I've had an intense interest in sex, but not in the actual goings-on of sex. You know, I watch Game of Thrones and I love it, but I watched Caligula and I had to turn it off when it got too explicit. I don't actually like watching the final moments of sex, if that makes sense. So during my sexual encounters, yeah, there was some parts of it that were interesting because they were new, but they were, I suppose the words I'd use to describe them on balance are boring and uncomfortable, physically uncomfortable. It's kind of like doing bad yoga.
What about masturbation?
Masturbation. Yeah, that's an interesting aspect of my life. So just to talk broadly about asexuals and masturbation first. Quite a few asexuals like masturbating regularly. And I'm one of them. I like to masturbate mostly because it's really good for getting me to sleep in the evenings and like shutting my brain off and kind of massaging myself into a stupor. But I didn't know how to masturbate myself until I was 23.
Had you not tried at all before the age of 23?
I tried, you know, from American comedies, you get a good idea of the grasping technique and, you know, what should bring you off, but it just never worked
Pies,
for me.
Pies, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pies. That never worked for you then?
I could bring myself to erection very easily, but I could never bring myself to orgasm because I didn't find it attractive. I didn't find it stimulating. And then one day last year, I was just lying in bed and something had, you know, stimulated me. And I moved around in the bed and something suddenly clicked. I was like, oh, that sensation felt, you know, not brilliant, but it was like when someone gives you a massage and they hit a really good spot and you're like, hmm. So I tried to make that motion again in the bed. And again, and again, and again, and again, and again. And to my surprise, I managed to bring myself off for the first time in my life. Yeah, so basically, if I want to masturbate, I have to get onto, like, all fours and kind of shag the bed. as if there was an invisible person there, kind of.
That's but, quite an image.
Yeah, yeah.
What would be your ideal relationship in the future, then? Your ideal setup?
We share a house and a love of elaborate costuming and decoration, a love of art and painting, and we'd have to like the same movies because I don't want to feel guilted into watching something I think is crap. And if, obviously, ideally, sex doesn't come naturally to me, hugging and caressing does, but I don't want to restrict myself in that way. So I suppose I don't really mind if the person I have a relationship with in the future with is sexually minded or not, as long as they're aware that I won't want to have it as much as they do, I suppose, and is willing to make concessions.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I think a lot of relationships require some compromises, although I would argue that they have to be positive compromises. I don't like the thought of imagining you forcing yourself to be sexual with somebody just because you think that might be the only way of keeping them around.
Yeah, that's why we'd kind of have to develop out of a deep-rooted, loving relationship rather than, you know, going on a date for the first time and knowing them for 20 minutes and finding yourself in their bed.
Would it appeal to you to date multiple people that might be satisfying their sexual urges with other people that they care for and having an asexual relationship with you?
I would love that. It would be brilliant if I could get that to work, because I think I was on the verge of establishing that in university. And then things got too far and some of my close-knit friendships had to drift a little bit apart because it got scary for them.
You mentioned that you've started to meet other people who are from the asexual community. How did you find them, for starters?
There is an asexual forum online called Avon, and because it's not really accepted, there's only ever been one study on asexual people. Well, I say that, it accidentally discovered asexual people and put a figure of approximately 1% of the British population being asexual. But this Avon group, they regularly arrange meetings and meetups, so I've been along to one of those and hope to go to more. But something that was really a pleasant surprise in my life is I ended up living with an asexual person for 2 years at university. And, you know, we didn't know each other beforehand. We were kind of both in reject groups that kind of cobbled together to get a house because we didn't have a strong base to go out and get one. And it took us a year and a half to realise we were both asexual. And our friendship had been pretty shallow until then. And then all of a sudden we had this massive thing in common and our friendship really took off and we started discussing it. And she's a very different asexual to me. So we found it very, very, like, very interesting, like, discussing where our asexuality diverges from the other.
And how does it? How are the two of you different?
Well, I'm pretty much an extrovert and I'm the one who's putting myself into social situations where romance and, you know, eroticism is likely to occur. I'm the one who gets drunk and dresses in drag and all that stuff. And she's much more introverted, but she was far more sexually experienced in not sexual encounters, but with her own, you know, body than I ever was. So, yeah, we're kind of polar opposites in so many ways. But we had the asexual mantle to tie us together.
What would you say to anybody who is wondering whether they might be asexual?
I'd say if you think you're asexual, you'll probably know if you are. It's such an intricate part of you. So it's so fundamental to the way to your outlook and how you behave that I think most asexual people do actually know that there's something different about them and that they are asexual. And if you are, or you think you are, you should just embrace it. And there's no need to have sex with someone to prove it to yourself. You'll know in and of itself whether or not you enjoy sex without ever actually going through with it. And I just say that you shouldn't feel pressurized into doing anything you're uncomfortable with.
I often hear about older people getting together in relationships that aren't sex-based. Do you think, as an asexual person, you might have a bit more luck in your silver years?
Yeah, it's something that I think about a lot, mainly because I'm looking specifically to the age of 30 with dread. Because at that age, I think most people are looking to get married, and the three death knells in a friendship, as far as I'm concerned, are engagement, moving in with each other, and having kids. I suppose I'm looking at a time when I see all my friends being married off and not having the time for me. And that's not a time in my life I'm looking forward to. But then I suppose after that, friendships and platonic relationships do become a lot more important. So whether or not I'll stick around that long to, you know, wait for it. Or if I'll just become comfortable in my own company and seeing people whenever, wherever. And hopefully have a job that kind of moves me about so much and has me doing so much that I don't need to tie myself down.
And as a film aficionado and a comic book fan, are there any people in cinema or in comic books who are asexual?
Ooh. See, I always like to think there are, and then some writer comes along and gives them a girlfriend. In the same way, I imagine many gay people are upset when they think a particular character is probably gay, and then they, you know, heteronormalized.
Who would you like to see made asexual?
Ooh. See, I'd say that most of the villains in the Marvel canon could be considered asexual, because they in no way ever look to have any sort of romantic or sexual relationship.
You are so right! That's so true!
It's probably a plot point for convenience sake, but yeah. So I'd probably pick my favourite villain, Baron Zemo, and I'd want him to be asexual.
Well, Deadpool is already pushing the boundaries with sexuality, so maybe we'll get an asexual superhero soon.
Maybe, I'd definitely like that. Yeah.
I left George's house with really mixed emotions. He has an infectious, enthusiastic giddiness that at times made being around him feel like I was inhaling a helium balloon at a birthday party. But on the flip side, some elements of his story are overwhelmingly sad. Not just the trauma that he's experienced in the past, but the prospect that someone who so delights in human company and craves closeness and warm friendship is worried about being left alone because he doesn't want to have sex. So worried, in fact, that he's felt compelled to test his boundaries, often through gritted teeth, and forced himself to endure intercourse. And he's now asking if that's a price worth paying for intimacy. Despite some people's scepticism or difficulty in grasping it, asexuality very clearly exists and George is not alone in how he defines. It's my fervent hope that he won't be alone much longer in his love life either. He doesn't like sex, but he does like closeness. And I'd really love for him to find a close encounter that works for him on his own terms. If you've been affected by anything in the programme, I urge you to speak to someone. If this show's about anything, it's about talking. The Samaritans are a good place to start, and they can help you find more specific support if you need it. If you're in the UK, just call 116 123, and you can give them a ring anytime. Next week, it's the last of this series of Close Encounters. So, we're going to have another special guest come in and hear your comments and stories. Maybe you've had a different experience of asexual relationships, or university, or dating in Manchester. If you've been inspired by George, or Omar, or Michelle and Ruben, email me at closeencounters@theguardian.com. Our theme music is by Secret Circuit. It's called Bells, and it's available now on Emotional Response. Close Encounters is a Guardian and Rethink audio production. It's produced by Matt Hill. Jason Phipps is the Guardian's head of audio, and I'm Alex Fox. Until next time, enjoy yourself.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.